As we take a look at this summer series in Proverbs, and we think of this as wisdom, I'm going to ask you to take just one step back and mentally put yourself in a setting. And this setting we find in the first several chapters, the first five, six chapters of Proverbs, where there is a phrase repeated again and again. My son. My son. Listen to this instruction. My son, follow this. My son, my son. As I reflected on that, I kind of wanted to bring up maybe things like a baseball glove, a set of golf clubs, a shovel, a broom. Why? Because that's where those conversations take place. You see, we're reminded of Deuteronomy chapter 6. It's grown, known as the Great Shema in Judaism. It's, hear, O Lord, the Lord our God is one. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. Love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And teach these to your children. Talk about them as you go along the way, as you rise up, as you go out, as you come in, as you lie down. This is where this takes place. It's almost sitting, you know, for this generation, because I still can't handle them. I'm tough enough with a little remote, let alone a game controller. But this is where these conversations take place. This is where this wisdom is transferred. It might be the grandparents to the grandchild. It might be the father to the son, the mother to the daughter, vice versa. But it's as we go along the way. It's not, here's the lecture, take your notes. And I'm not trying to be facetious with this, but it's as we see it applied, as we walk along in relationship, this is where the real transformation takes place. So think of this as we hear this. This is your grandparent, your parent, going along the way with you, sharing these proverbs of wisdom, walking in the ways of God. As we do this, I want to remind you that what I'm talking about today is merely an introduction, because we're going to try to dive into the wisdom and folly of finances. Everybody said, yay? Wow, that was fake, but okay, I'll take it. You see, I have found that most folks would rather talk about intimate physical medical procedures than talk about their finances. Am I true? Is that right? Okay. This is a flyover introduction. And again, I have to take a survey, because I know that some societal rules have changed, but I've got to ask a question. Who drank from the garden hose when they were thirsty? Okay, thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, today we might be drinking from the fire hose. So be careful, it's a lot, and it's in a hurry. I'll try not to keep you too long. But this is why we can only do an introduction, because I'm going to give you, hopefully, what I found was four financial foundations out of Proverbs. And one of those has eight practical applications. We don't have time to dive into all of it in depth. Each one deserves its own message. But this is what I hope to share. So I'm going to ask you, if you're following along, and I do encourage you to, in the Pew Bible, if you don't have your own Bible, I'm going to ask you to stick your fingers in page 528. That takes us to Proverbs 3, and page 167 that takes us out of Proverbs into Deuteronomy chapter 26. If you will keep those, that's page 528, which is Proverbs 3, and page 167, which is Deuteronomy 26. I want to remind you some foundations that Mike has laid with this summer series in Proverbs. The Proverbs themselves are God's wisdom applied to life. As our bumper video shows, it's how life works according to its designer. And wisdom here is defined as understanding and living according to what is true. Another way to say true is what's really real. Otherwise, foolishness is rejecting it. It's living in ways that are inconsistent with what's really real. It's trying to invent our own reality. And Proverbs is a call to gain wisdom and live accordingly as the highest virtue, the highest pursuit of life. And so Proverbs 1, 7, 9, and 10 are the foundations for these. I'll read them. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. And you may recall that Pastor Mike shared with you that this fear that we're talking about is definitely misunderstood if we think of it as I need to run and cower and hide in fear. No, this is the proper understanding that God is God and I am not. Another way of saying that, wisdom is living, recognizing God as God and Lord of all. And foolishness is deciding I'm God and living life independently. Proverbs is this call, and there are some key passages. So Proverbs 1, 7, and 9, or 1. Another one is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. This verse, this passage, reminds us that we're not to put too much stock in our own thinking because it's pretty foul. It's pretty fallible. But though our paths need straightened because otherwise they're crooked. So I have to ask your question. Lean not into your own understanding. What is your natural bent towards finances? How did you learn how to manage them? When you think of finances, what emotions happen? That's your natural bent. There's lots of reasons that it can happen that way. You know, the skeptic says, oh, the church is financially in trouble, or they're about to start another project, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about this. Not true, not true. Mike challenged the staff to dive into the book of Proverbs and prepare messages based on what we thought God was telling us. And I want to tell you my natural bent towards finances. Even though I know different biblically and theologically, my natural bent, my damaged heart, believes in scarcity, not abundance. It was a revelation to me to understand God as generous financially. Not that I'm preaching health and wealth, hear me. God promises faithfulness to supply our needs. And he calls us to be content and to be on mission with him. Getting ahead of myself. But my bent is that when the unexpected happens, my whole body goes. The stomach knots. The heart palpitates. The hands sweat. Other things happen you don't want to know about. Because it betrays that I don't really believe in those moments that God is real, that his promise to supply all my need, that he knows everything about me, and that he goes before me and goes behind me. In those moments, I don't really believe that. I believe the lies of the enemy that says, he's not good. You can't trust him. This is disaster, and there is no recovery. That's my natural bent. So I have to keep coming back to the truth rather than walk in foolishness and let my heart lead the way. How about you? What do you experience? Joy? How many experience joy about their finances? It's a little quiet out there. How about frustration? Anybody frustration? Okay. Anybody real proud about their finances? I did it all right. Sorry for you folks. Thank you for not raising your hand. Fear and anxiety. Nobody has that, right? Okay. Who has the luxury of saying, that's my folks' problem or that's somebody else's problem? I don't have to worry about it. Oh, wow. We're going to do some marriage counseling over there. I won't tell you which family that was. Thank you. We all have a natural bent. And the whole thing of this is, can we come to the Word of God? Can we lean not unto our own understanding? Can he make our path straight? I hope to give you some hope and freedom. Today, I want to give you the four foundational principles from the book of Proverbs for our finances. I'm going to spend a lot of time on number one, and if we get to it, we're going to rush through number four. In the meantime, we'll hit two and three. So which of your financial pathways needs straightening in your life? The first principle, I know it says number two on the screen, but it's number one, okay? Wisdom acknowledges God as the provider of all we need. Wisdom acknowledges God as the provider of all we need, and blessings flow and follow those who honor God with their resources. This comes from Proverbs 3, 9, and 10. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. I've got to say it again. I've got to caution. This is not health and wealth gospel. This is not name it and claim it. Because when we read that your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine, it's talking about multiple levels of prosperity and blessing. It's not necessarily talking about the financial bottom line. We'll see that in a minute. And as I do, I'm going to ask you to go ahead and look at Deuteronomy 26 in the Pew Bible 167. And as you turn to that, I want to tell you what this is. This honoring God with your wealth and the first fruits of all your produce. There is this principle here, this term first fruits, that we may not be that familiar with. And it takes us back to the Israelite history. As they came through the Exodus, traveled through the desert of Sinai for 40 years to go into the promised land, that they were called to offer this thing called first fruits because they were in a covenant relationship. And Pastor Mike and the rest of the staff, we talk about what is this covenant thing. I can't afford to spend too much time. We understand that a covenant that God makes with us is his unbreakable commitment to us. It's a pledge he literally signed in his own blood through Jesus Christ. Go back, there's wonderful imagery of that in the Old Testament with Abraham. But a covenant is God saying, I am your God, you are my people. It's God obligating himself to us and us being called to live according to what he has done in allegiance to him, and to experience his goodness as a result of doing that. That's what this covenant is. So I'm going to ask you to, I won't let you skip ahead on that. That's too soon. Let's take a look at Deuteronomy 26, 1 through 11. It's not on the screen because I'd love for you to actually look at it in the scriptures and follow along with this. This is the instructions to the Israelites as they're ready to go from the promise or from the journey in the desert into the promised land. Follow along. When you come into the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance and have taken possession of it and live in it, you shall take some of the first of all the fruit of the ground which you harvest from your land that the Lord your God is giving you. And you shall put it in a basket, and you shall go to the place that the Lord your God will choose to make his name to dwell there. And you shall go to the priest who is in office at that time and say to him, I declare to you today, to the Lord your God, that I have come into the land that the Lord swore to our fathers to give us. Then the priest shall take it, the basket from your hand and set it down before the altar of the Lord your God. And you shall make response before the Lord your God. Therefore, you should say this. This is what they would say when they brought their offering. A wandering Aramean was my father, and he went down into Egypt and sojourned there, few in number. And there he became a nation, great, mighty, and populous. And the Egyptians treated us harshly and humiliated us and laid on us hard labor. Then we cried to the Lord, and the God of our fathers, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our affliction, our toil, and our oppression. And the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great deeds of terror, with signs and wonders. And he brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And behold, now I bring the first of the fruit of the ground, which you, O Lord, have given me, and you shall set it down before the Lord and your God, and worship before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice in the good that the Lord your God has given you and to your house, to you and the Levite and the sojourner that is among you. May God add his blessing to the reading of his word. All right, when did we jump up and down, celebrate and praise after we took an offering? Never mind, don't ask the question. Let me tell you why this is important. I need to hurry. You see, this offering of this first fruits was one occasion where all Israelite men, one of three throughout the year, where they were required to go to the place God had designated, originally the tabernacle, later the temple in Jerusalem. So it didn't matter if they were 30 miles away, 50 miles away. Three times a year, the men were required to come. It's that significant. Now, this Feast of First Fruits was one of the first feasts of their year. Feast. Notice it's called a feast. It started with Passover. Passover started their year and was their most important holiday because they celebrated when God delivered them out of the slavery of Egypt through the blood that was applied over their doorposts, the blood of the Lamb. There's all that symbolism there. That followed with a week of feasting of unleavened bread, unleavened to represent their haste to leave that slavery. And then later it was prepared with this Feast of First Fruits to celebrate the first of the spring harvest, barley. 50 days later, they celebrated the Feast of Pentecost. This was the harvest feast signifying the beginning of the wheat harvest. Then, the end of the growing season, the Feast of Tabernacles or Ingathering was in the fall, and it celebrated the rest, the entire harvest. All of these were different portions of their livelihood and their income, and they were called to consecrate the first portion to God as recognition of his provision and his promise. Does this sound like a New Testament verse? That he would finish what he started. He is faithful to complete what he has begun in us. And it was combined sacrifice worship and celebration. Celebration because of the confidence of what and goodness of God that they could do this. So this feast recognized that he was Lord of all, provider of all they need, redeemer and rescuer, that gives them reason to hope and rejoice with confidence. This is the first foundation. Honor God with your wealth and the first fruits of your produce. The second foundational principle is this: wisdom and righteousness, righteous living, are the greatest treasures to pursue. Follow along with me here in 8:10 and 18 through 21. Take my instruction instead of silver and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you may desire cannot compare with her. Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. I walk in the way of righteousness, in the paths of justice, granting an inheritance to those who love me, and filling their treasuries. I think we agree with that, but we don't. And that's because we depend so much on our finances. But there's a large part of this with which we can agree. Can you think, and no names here, no names, please. Can you think of anyone that has a lot of wealth and doesn't display much wisdom? Do you want to leave politics, athletics, and Hollywood out of it? How about, do you know someone that's crossed paths with you in your life that was a treasure trove of wealth, but maybe didn't have two pennies? Do you value their contribution to your life? And what happens to us? We make the jokes. There aren't U-Haul trailers following Hearsts. I used to tell folks when I did financial advising, listen, folks, this is a plan. And sometimes God gets to laugh at our plan. Because if the whole economy goes, so does my wealth. But God does not fail. He trusts. He preserves. So wisdom. And finally, have we seen, have we observed, have we known of anybody that had both wealth and the wisdom to use it? What a blessing they are. And may we all be that way. A third principle here foundationally, wealth, poverty, oppression, and injustice exist in this life. And God is sovereign over all. This is actually a hard foundation for us to swallow. Proverbs 22:2, the rich and the poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. The poor man and the oppressor meet together. The Lord gives light to the eyes of both. You see, we sometimes get caught up in stamping out oppression. Not that we shouldn't be concerned with it. Or solving all poverty. Or righting all wrongs. And we're powerless to do that. You see, we are called to mitigate those things with the love of God, with the knowledge of God, and the resources he's given us. It was Jesus himself who said, the poor you will have with you always. I have no right to be calloused about that. But I need to remember that the Lord is the Lord of all. And ultimate justice, ultimate care is his. And I get to be an instrument of his to mitigate those things. Does that make sense? Apparently not. Thank you. All right, third principle, moving on. Wealth obtained and used wisely is a blessing to the one who has it and to others. Wealth obtained and used foolishly, this is actually number four, I apologize, is harmful. Now, this is where we're going to move real fast, okay? Because eight life applications, folks, I'll tell you how we got here. Talking with Pastor Mike and the staff, and we talked to them, looking at Proverbs over the summer, and we were charged with a task. Prepare a message from the book of Proverbs. Okay, which topic, Mike? It touches on everything. Well, you go study it and spend time in prayer, and you come back and let me know what God lays on your heart. Mike, what are you preaching on so I don't do that? We're all asking these questions. Now, what it did actually, it forced me to do some more study. The subjects in the book of Proverbs are just across all of life's spectrum. Trying to boil this down into one message, folks, we're only getting started. So I need you to be like the Berean Christians. I need you, if you're taking notes, to take this as a starter, to go back to the scriptures and look at what I'm telling you first to verify it's true, and to do more on your own, because I can only get you started, all right? And we're walking this together. I've just confessed to you that I don't have this mastered, but I long for it, and I'm glad for his grace and glory as we do this. So quickly, eight life applications. We're going to do this as a chart, okay? We're going to go down what's wise, according to the Proverbs, with finances, and what's foolish. Are we ready? Did I hear snoring? Okay. All right. wise. First principle of what is wise. Proverbs 11 through 24 is a great one. 28 through 20. Generous use of wealth blesses and multiplies. That sounds pretty obvious, but let me help you here. Let me help me. One of the greatest pictures we have geographically in the land of Israel is the geography of the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and the Dead Sea. You see, this wonderful Sea of Galilee, teeming with fish and life, is fed by the rains and the waters coming down out of the hills into the Sea of Galilee. It's vibrant, it's alive, and out of it flows the Jordan River that waters this land flowing with milk and honey, as the scriptures provide it. It's fertile, it's teeming with life. Jordan ends in the what sea? Why is it dead? It's dead because it has no outlet. All that flows down, all that's washed in it, all the minerals coming down out of the hills, through the Sea of Galilee, across the Jordan River, all of the sediment, all of the minerals end up in the Dead Sea. It cannot sustain life because it does not release. Nothing flows through it. You see, we are given these resources by God, not just for our sustenance, but that it might flow through us, that we might partner with Him to bless others. And in doing so, we have vibrancy. We have life abundant. Again, this is not health and wealth gospel. This is life God's way. On the other hand, if we are the Dead Seas, the greedy accumulation of wealth, it's fleeting and leads to evil. We become self-centered. We become a little prideful. Well, if you did it the way I did it, you'd be just as well off. Now, we won't talk about using it for power to corrupt. We've seen that. Moving on. Wealth provides limited protection while poverty increases vulnerability. So why is it limited protection? By the way, who carries auto insurance, homeowners insurance, huh? Anybody? Okay. Your money that you're using, that God has blessed you with, offers you some protections. But you know it's got a limit, right? But it does help with life. Whereas those who can't afford that, if they have the car and they get into the accident and they can't afford the full coverage insurance, guess what? It's a total loss. It's an inconvenience if we have the full coverage and our premiums go up. That's just a little illustration. But the Proverbs tell us that the rich man's wealth is his ransom. What does that mean? That means I don't have to worry about getting kidnapped because I don't have enough for ransom. Okay. But that's what happens. It attracts problems too. So it has both sides. Number three. This is important. Proverbs 23, 4 through 5 tells us the wise limit their pursuit of wealth. This passage tells us that the wise man knows when to stop pursuing it. Man, that reminds me of the Sabbath day. Jesus reminded us the Sabbath was made for man. I love the way one teacher put it, that the Sabbath day is very much like this. That God put man in the garden and said, go explore, be fruitful, multiply, create, enjoy. But one day a week, I want you to put the toys away. And I want you to come spend time with me. You know, when we put the money in its perspective, when I decide with God's help to take him at his word and say, that's enough. And I can tell you, I've done done just the opposite. My wife will tell you that she has a term. It's called the Funmaker's Widow. Funmaker's was a company blessed our family, but it was weekend work. It was night work. And when I was out doing that, feeling that I needed to close what I thought was this income gap, I missed some time with her and my boys, my daughter. I'd take that back in many ways if I could. Wise man knows when to limit. But riches don't help the wicked avoid judgment. Doesn't matter how much money I've got if I'm not right with God. I might buy my way out of the legal system, and I might bribe the judge. I might sit in a country club penitentiary because of my wealth. But God knows the truth. Life application 4. Poverty with integrity is noble. In that God is sovereign over both. We are foolish to assume that all poverty is because of foolish living. Do we hear that? We can help folks with poverty. We can help ourselves by living wisely. But disaster comes. Some of us have not been taught how to help our situation. And there are those simply who have limited means, limited ability, but when they are right with God, their integrity is noble and to be admired. On the other hand, to disregard the poor leads to curses. We get to help one another. We get to represent that. Life application 5. Diligent work is the most reliable source of wealth. Now, if those of you have heard Dave Ramsey, you've heard this pounded repeatedly. Dave Ramsey and his financial peace. Okay? But folks, this is, I don't want to sound condescending. This is a basic principle that it seems that our culture rails against. We have diminished work in many ways. Okay? But it is the most consistent way. It's not relying on a program or somebody else to do something. God has equipped most of us that not all of us have the ability. But when we can, work is honorable. God created work. It's not a curse from the fall. Man was put in the garden to work, to co-create, to do what God has done before the fall ever happened. Enough of that. But on the other hand, sloth and worthless pursuits are major contributions to poverty. I don't wish to step on anyone's toes. But we've got a culture that kind of teaches us that life should be easy and without difficulty. I should go through the formula. If I go to school, I do this and do that, then boom, I should be self-sufficient from there on. And it shouldn't be hard. And so these passages from Proverbs tell us that the slothful person doesn't leave their house because they're afraid there's a bear outside or a lion. That they put their hand in the dish and are too lazy to take the food out and eat it. That they're so comfortable that, a little sleep, a little slumber, and poverty comes to all. We're not so voiceful about the worthless pursuits. Again, please take this as what it is. There are pursuits in life that are profitable, and there are some that are not. And there's a bit of a teaching. Follow your passion. Again, I will refer to Dave Ramsey. Take your passion with you and earn an income. There are some things that just aren't profitable. Sometimes making widgets pays the bill. And if I make enough widgets, I can pursue my passion. Not mine. That's the Proverbs. God's way. Sort of like gravity. 6. Maintenance of short and long-term focuses and managing resources. These are wise. versus instant gratification without a long-term focus. I understand crisis. And I understand that crisis can condition us. I just have to have this. I have to have a reliable car. I have to have an apartment. I have to have, now, granted, food, clothing, shelter, transportation are kind of financial basics. But it might be multiple ways of getting there. Because what happens next? If I get the apartment, can I pay for it next month? If I get the car, can I afford the insurance or the repairs? It's inconvenient not to have those things. But go to the ant, Proverbs 6:6-9 tells us. Go to the ant, O sluggard. It does not have a captain, but it gathers food for now and for winter. We used to call it the rainy day fund. Why? Because it does rain. Things happen. You know, I tell you this and go back just a little bit because we got over the skeptic part of the church is hurting or starting a new project. I just want to not brag, but I want to commend that we went through a couple of major renovations projects in the last decade. And the great news is that we were able to cash flow that. And again, that's not bragging. That's a testament of your faithfulness of members and the stewardship of our leaders. But the church is like any other business or household. We've got a 60-year-old building. We've got 60-year-old boilers. We've got a roof that's getting past 20, 25 years. Now, I was so blessed when my family, we started attending here. Something happened that I had not seen happen in a church before. I pulled in one Sunday and the parking lot looked absolutely different. It had been resurfaced. What? There was no crying from the pulpit? There was no beg for money? How'd that happen? It was a blessing. And so we make a habit of not coming for false appeals. And I'm not making one now. But I think we should know that we didn't go broke doing those. But we pretty much empty all reserves. We borrowed a little from internally. And it's your faithfulness that we've been able to grow and expand our ministries as we've done that. That's a wonderful thing. And so I want to thank you for doing that. Huh? Lord willing, we will build those reserves back up so that we can do more. Fair enough. It is wise to trust in God and have concern for others more than wealth. I wish that I wouldn't have to say more on that. But relationships are more important than money. Anybody know of a family after the funeral, members stopped talking to each other because of the money? That's tragic. That's tragic. Relationships are more important. And I hope that we, and I hope that I, because I'm in the process of needing to take care of my father's estate, I hope that if there would be disagreement with my siblings, that I would honor my word to walk away from it all and not lose the relationship than to get mine. Envy, stinginess and oppression of others are foolish. You know, I have likes. I've been in some families' houses here, and I go back to my home of 30 years, and I look at my wife, and I'm sorry, dear, that I made you the queen of Leeser Avenue. But you know what? It doesn't matter if you've got the palace. That's not our home. Because Jesus said, I am going to prepare a place for you. And when I have, I will come and take you home with me. So when you come to my house and you see my exposed floors, don't worry, it's in process. My home, real home's being built. This is just my tent, okay? Let's put our stick in that. So why can't I give to others? Why do I need to envy what somebody else has that's going to burn up, that won't be part of the next life, real life? Finally, personal financial responsibility is wise. Taking on someone else's responsibility is foolish and dangerous, according to the Proverbs, as is indebtedness. And that's not telling us never have any debt. We can have that discussion about good debt, bad debt. But the real danger here is that out of our care and out of our goodness, there are times when we do something that we call co-signing. That the Proverbs tell us, if you've done like that, run, flee, settle that as quickly as you can, because apparently time's up. Okay. You just want to grab the hook? Wow. That was rough. You see, the problem in that danger is a lot of times we feel that we're helping somebody. And the danger is if they didn't have the resources to start with, the likelihood that they're going to have the resources to pay it off are slim. And so the Proverbs just tells us, avoid that dangerous situation. Avoid debt when you can. Part of this is trusting God, and back to this whole thing of first fruits. Did God promise to meet your needs? Did God promise never to leave you or forsake you? Did God call you to trust in him because he's worthy? To be content with him. That's the call. And am I the only one? Have you messed up your finances? Come on, don't leave me alone. I'd raise my feet if I could. And I got to tell you this, and I hope this brings you some freedom. Because in the effort to be a good steward, because this was taught to me as an example, I watched my father as I grew up, and I watched my sister nod earlier today as I shared this. I watched him every Sunday on top of the dresser write out the check and put it in the envelope. And then with my first allowance of a dollar, I was reminded that a dime belonged to God. Not all of us have been taught that. In fact, some of us have been beaten up with, you should give more. I don't care about the amount. God doesn't care about the amount. He wants to know, where's your heart? Are you trusting him? Will you give to see what he does? Will you take him up on his promise? That if you bring it in, he will pour out the blessings of heaven, and you don't know what they look like. But he says, rejoice. Come celebrate that I've done this and I'm going to be faithful to the end with you. And it may be a storm now. The desert trip for the Israelites was not straight. It was circular. They fought wars. They had diseases. They had problems. But he still brought them into the promised land that he gave them. Will you trust him? If you need help with this, we're here to help, because this is the rest of the faith. We're the same way. We do this together. So if you don't know how to turn things around, come to us. Let us know. We have deacons that handle benevolence. Several of us are versed in financial coaching and counseling, and we want to walk this journey with you. So I'm going to close this in prayer. And whatever it is, if you need to just say, hey, God, thank you. If you need to say, you know, my heart has not been trusting of you, and I'm going to today honor you with the first fruits of my wealth. Or I really need help. Whatever you need to do, do that before God today. And I'll be around here. If you want to pray, together, you want some help with that, come up over here on the left side. If you'd like to pray on your own, go ahead on the right. I ask that you bow with me. Father, we bring this to a close in this time, praying that you have opened our hearts, you've opened our minds to your glory, that your resources are limitless, and that you call us to trust in you as Father, Abba, Daddy, Father, and Father, the giver of all good things. So let us give you praise. Let us thank you for the grace that you've given, the forgiveness, and your promise to never leave us or forsake us. That we could walk wisely with our finances, that we could be blessings to others. That in all ways, Father, your name would be glorified and praised. In Jesus, we thank you. Amen.